All right. Good to see y'all out again today. If you've ever heard of George Frideric Handel, you know what he's probably best noted for, right? What did he write? He put the music to that. Actually, he'd been on a pretty bad low. You know, he'd been doing operas, and they were not working too well, and he was having a lot of financial problems when the Duke at Devonshire asked him if he would help work on this project. And actually, his friend Charles Jennings asked him. Jennings had actually written the word part to it. What do they call that, an oratory? And he asked him, would he put some music to it? And so he challenged him because he was kind of down and on the bottom. And he challenged him, and when he challenged him, they say for 24 days he didn't eat a bite, that he worked on it. In 24 days he composed the Messiah. If you've never heard it, my goodness, you ought to hear it. But it was a miracle. But what happened was the challenge is what brought his attention, arrested his attention, to get up and quit dragging around because everything wasn't going so well. And what we see today in the verses, remember we're going right through John, and we're going to keep going right through John for a while. And we come to the place in John chapter 4 where we see where Jesus challenges a lady who is an outcast. And through that challenge, he connects with her, and she realizes what she needs and makes an eternal change in her life. And that's exactly, she's in the same place that all of us are in. And he challenges an outcast. I don't know if you've ever heard of Paul Brand, but he used to do a lot of work, was well known for doing restoration surgery to people with leprosy in India. He was from Louisiana, where he went back and forth across the Atlantic, and on one particular occasion he was in London, and he'd been traveling and was exhausted, and he got to his room that night and he sat down and he felt his heel was numb, and so he said, you know, what's going on? And so he took out a needle and started sticking his heel because, you know, that is the fear working with leprosies, that's the telltale sign when you start having numbness. And so he started sticking his heel with a needle, and he couldn't feel anything. So the rest of the night, all he could think about was, what would it be like to be a leper, to be an outcast from his staff that he had been working with? He's world-renowned for it. From his family, from everything that he knew, he said that's all that consumed him. In a biography written by, or book written by Dorothy Wilson, 10 Fingers for God, she said that he was consumed with it, and finally when he went to sleep, that was what was on his mind, that he would be rejected by everybody. As you know, they had leper colonies, and if you contracted it, you know, you were separated from the rest of society. But the next morning he woke up, and he decided that he would check again. So he took a needle again, and he poked it in his heel, and he yelled. Why? Because he realized he'd been sitting so long that his heel was just numb from the position that he'd been in for so long that it wasn't leprosy. But that's what he was thinking about. What it would be like to be an outcast and separated, where he had been the one going to these people and had a lot of success in India, like, as I said, restoring people through surgery that had leprosy. And that's exactly what we see. We see a lady here that Jesus deals with in chapter 4, and I can't read all the verses for the sake of time. I'm going to just read some of the highlights. But he challenges an outcast lady. Even though she didn't have leprosy, that's exactly what it was like for her. John focus is still on, remember, John chapter 21, in the last of it, John keeps saying this. He says, I've written this whole book. I've written the whole book of John for one reason, that you would believe that Jesus is God in the flesh, and in believing, you would have eternal life. That's his whole purpose. Doesn't change from it. So he comes again, and his focus here is still, it's not on the Samaritan woman who's an outcast. You know, that's just the situation that's in. But the focus is still that Jesus is God in a human body. That's it. And he says it's imperative that we understand and we see that. And not only us, but all of his readers. And that's exactly what we see. He reminds us in this narrative, and that's what it is. Sometimes it's harder to, you know, pull things out of just a narrative, that God loves all mankind, even those who are others label as an outcast. And the ability of Christ here wasn't for him to love her wasn't determined by the object of the person or the lady. It was determined by the character of Jesus himself. And that's what's important, you know. And you'll see, you know, if we're honest with ourselves, we're just like that lady. You and I, because of sin, are outcast. And we are separated from God, and we'll see how it comes through. Verse 1, it says, when therefore the Lord knew how the Pharisees, remember we saw last week how that contention was there and that confrontation because the people were leaving John the Baptist, that Old Testament prophet, and they were going to Jesus now for all these months. So when all this is happening, Jesus then, he leaves because he heard that this was happening. And he says, though Jesus himself, some people say, well, Jesus, but no, it says right here clearly, Jesus' disciples were baptizing, but he wasn't. So when that went on, Jesus decides to leave Judea and to go to Galilee. So he left Judea and he departed again into Galilee. And if you remember, if you look on your map, you see that Judea's in the south. And so you're going north about a 3 days journey to get to the area of Galilee. All right. And guess what is right dab in the middle? Samaria. And that's exactly where this lady was. And he needed to go through Samaria. Then he came to a city of Samaria, which is called Sychar. Actually, it's the same Shechem that Abram was there in Jacob in that same area. It just had on a different name. Near to the parcel of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Remember. Now, Jacob's well was there. Jesus, therefore, being wearied with his journey, sat thus by the well and was about the sixth hour. And there came a woman of Samaria to draw water. And Jesus said unto her, give me drink. For his disciples had gone away into the city, the same city of Samaria, to buy meat. Now, here's exactly what we see. This lady is a Samaritan woman. And as we'll see it unfolds, she was an outcast because something had happened back in 722 whenever the northern kingdom had already split after Solomon died. And you had 10 tribes to the north and 2 to the south. So the northern kingdom they fell first, you remember, in 722. And as a result of that, and we'll hit on this again in just a moment, but here's what was going on historically. Whenever 722, when the Syrians came in, they took all of the elite people. We saw some of this in Daniel, remember? They took all the elites of Israel and shipped them out. So you had other people of different places come and begin living there in that area. And the few Jews that were left, they intermarried and they became Samaritans. And they were looked at as politically as rebels, as renegades, and because they didn't keep that Jewish blood to Jewish blood pure, they looked them as outcasts. And so it wasn't, if you think that there was ever any prejudice and bias between blacks and white in our country, it wouldn't hold a light to what was there, and it's still there. It still exists. So he has a challenge regardless of the circumstances. Because this lady is there, and he is going to break several rules in reaching out to her. Then came he to a city of Samaria. Now remember, it's a 3 days journey, and according to the time of the day, probably at 6 o'clock in the afternoon, whether you look at Jewish time or Roman time, but it was probably because he had been walking all day, and he was exhausted. That he comes there, and what the historians tell us, the normal route was, okay, you're down south, and you're going to go up to Galilee. What normally the Jews would do, instead of going through that shortcut of Samaria, they would go across the Jordan, go up on this side, cross over the Jordan again, and get to Galilee in the north. They would not walk straight through and go through Samaria because of that hatred. I mean, they would say that they were defiled because these were not only blood rebels, but King Omri in 2 Kings, he had actually set up a northern kingdom. He had called Samaria as a capital, and on Mount Gerizim is where they started worshiping. They didn't go down to Jerusalem anymore where God had ordained. So you see a political and you see a religious animosity going on here to the max. So they would just go around it. But Jesus says, you know, it says, and he needed to go through Samaria. There's all kinds of speculation on why they say it had to happen. All we know is it says he needed to go. That God had ordained he needed to go that way. And I think it probably was to show the Jews that he was not biased and that the Gentiles, he cared for them just like he did the Jewish people. So there came a woman to Samaria to draw water. Of Samaria to draw water. Now, number one, there was a well in Samaria. So why would she travel half a mile or a mile out of town to go to Jacob's well to get water? Think about it. She's an outcast. Probably, you know, the other people look down on her, and Jesus is going to explain why in just a moment when he starts asking her questions. So and rather to be dealing with people that hate you, you just kind of would go farther, and that's probably why she was there, because there was plenty of water out of Judean hills in the town of Samaria. She didn't have to go out to this well at Shechem or Sukkar to get water, but she did. And Jesus said to her, you know, he's traveling. His other disciples are going into town to get some food, and he's there by himself. And he says, give me something to drink. And actually, the word in the Greek New Testament there that is used because of how she responds to him. And she says, why would you, a Jew, because actually the word means they would not even use the same utensils. That's how it was. That there would, a Jew would absolutely not even touch a Samaritan's, anything they have, because they'd see them as being defiled. And Jesus comes there and he doesn't have anything to drink with. And this lady is saying, wait a minute, I don't understand. You're asking me to give you a drink from my cup because you don't even have one. She said, this is not the way that works. So he blows her mind. But here's the deal. He challenges her, just like he does us, regardless of what our circumstances are. It doesn't really matter to him. You know, you might be in a mess just like she's in a mess, for two reasons. She inherited that. Her heritage was that, but she made some really bad choices, as we're going to see on the other side. But regardless of that, he deals with it. He leaves Judea. He passes through Samaria to reach Galilee. And he encounters this woman who is an outcast because of her heritage, because she's looked at as a half-breed, you know, because the Jews intermarried with some of those other people that were Gentiles, and because of some life choices that she had made, because she had made some, unfortunately, that were not good. You know, there are all kind of challenges in life, and how do we deal with those? A lady that was writing in Reader's Digest, all she said was LTJ was her name. She didn't put her full name. But she said the summer was here, and she was having a problem with her teenage son being a bum. You know, he wouldn't cut the grass. I know none of y'all have ever had to deal with that, right? Is it just when they become teenagers? No, I don't think so. I think it starts at about 5 or 2. And anyway, she said, I got to do something. So they had a brand new puppy, and he wouldn't help with training the puppy, and, you know, it was just a mess. We got a new puppy, and they make a mess everywhere, you know, all over the yard. They drag up everything from a dead rat they killed to whatever. So she said, we got to do something. So she goes to the library, and she's checking out a book on how to train a dog. But while she's doing it, she sees one, and it was, how was it titled? It was titled, Teenagers, the Continuing Challenge. So she said, I'll take that one too. So she takes him up to the front desk to check him out in the library and looks at him and says, you'll have better luck with the dog. Good luck. It's a challenge. But, you know, Jesus doesn't really care what your problem is because he knows you have one. All of us have one. And she had one. She had two of them mainly. One she had chosen and the other one that she just inherited because she was a Samaritan. So in the middle of circumstances, you know, God really didn't care what the circumstances are. But he's there to help us through them and get us out of them if we'll listen. So they're around Jacob's well. You remember Jacob, Esau, how Jacob had 12 sons. He had dug this well probably 100 feet deep, had good clear water in it, because water was not a plentiful thing there all over the place because of the desert. But here at this well where they would come, that's exactly where they are. So he challenges this woman to face her sin and seek one who is willing and able to restore her. So that is the challenge. And he starts. But here's the thing. He connects with her just like he does with us right where we are. That's where she was. She was a Samaritan. She was there at that well. And so he says, give me a drink. So he connects with her. And again, blows her mind. So she came there and Jesus said, give me something to drink. And you have to keep in mind several things. Number one, ladies, before Jesus liberated them, really were seen as just property. For surely, a Pharisee would never talk to a lady in public. A rabbi, even there were some conditions made that they could speak to their mother, but even their own family, their own children, they couldn't talk to them in public. All right? A woman was just, they say sometimes that Jesus condemned them. No, he liberated them. When you see what was going on, you ever thought about it? He never revealed who he was specifically to any other religious leader, but he does first to this lady, this woman, this Gentile, because in the end, we're going to see that she recognizes he's the Christ. And he says that. We don't see that anywhere else. He didn't choose to do it with the Pharisees or the Sadducees or any other leaders. He did it with her. So he said unto her, give me a drink. Then he said, the woman said to him, how is it that you being a Jew ask me for something? For the Jews, look what she says, have no dealings. That's where that word comes from. They wouldn't even use the same utensils. You know, there's a few in here that are old enough to remember. We used to do it quite often. There were several wells around us still that we drew our own water out of the well with a bucket. And you know what everybody drank out of? The bucket. You know, you drew it up and you let it lean over so the water, it was bad manners to let the water go back in the well. Now, you had to set it on the side, especially if you were little, and you'd tilt the bucket over and you'd drink out of it. And if you dripped in, it dripped on the outside. You couldn't let it go back in the well. That was a no-no. I know somebody, they got killed over that kind of stuff. Literally, they got killed and they threw him in the well after that happened, right there about a mile from where I live. So you just didn't do that kind of stuff. But he says, and that's exactly what she's saying. You're going to drink from what I have? That just doesn't happen, you see? And that's exactly what Jesus does. He meets us at a place where a lot of times everybody else tells us, oh, no, Jesus can't deal with you. Yes, he can. It don't really matter. He throws that out the window. All the biases, he throws them away. He talks with a lady in public, which is unheard of, a Jew, and she could recognize that he was a Jew just by what he was wearing. You say, well, how did he know that? And until she had the conversation, she could tell by what they wore, by what he spoke, by the way it was. She said, how is it? She knew it. How would you even talk to me? Jews don't talk to Samaritans. There's too much hatred there. So he's blowing her mind, and he connects with her. I read a story. Some of you race car people in here, there's a few of you, right? Y'all know the name Lake Speed, right? Who knows that name? Raise your hand. You remember when he came on the scene? Anybody? 1980. He came on the scene. A couple years later, he won, something 500 at Darlington. It was called something else. But he won and was doing well. And right after that, a major racer came to him and wanted him to drive for them. And he said, okay. But they said, we don't have a sponsor yet. So he moves to another location. They're getting ready. And what is the big race in Florida? My goodness, I can't even remember it. Daytona was coming up, and they didn't have a sponsor yet. So the guy who owned the team, he said, well, you know, if we don't run but this one race and then we quit, we're going to run that one. So Lake said, man, he'd been praying and he'd been worried, you know, how is this thing going to work out? I don't know what's going to happen. But that's what he said. So the day before, there was a preliminary race, and he was just hanging out there watching it, and this guy came up to him and just started talking to him, and he just said, you know, and he found out this guy was interested in racing, but he couldn't understand it. So he explained everything to them, and they sat there and they just talked during the race. He said, you know, I've just never seen so much excitement. He said, I've always wanted to get in on this, but I could never get anybody to connect with me to where I could understand it. He says, I'm here representing Nationwide Auto Parts, and we're looking for a car to sponsor. The next day, painted in fresh paint, hadn't hardly dried, he goes in. Remember where he ends up in that race? Anybody remember? 1985? Second place only unto who? Bill Elliott. You know, Bill Elliott was dominating then. But he said he actually, when the TV cameras were interviewing him, he was crying. He was a believer, and he'd been praying that God would do something. And not only did he do well in the race, but they had a sponsor. Wow. But the man said, you know what? I've always wanted this, but I couldn't connect with anybody. You know, if you can't connect with Jesus, it's your fault. It's not his. Because he's going to meet you right in the pit wherever you are if you're willing. But you know what? He has to dig it out, this lady. Because she's just like all of us. She didn't really want to admit all that was going on in her life. There was a serious hatred and bitterness between the Jews and the Samaritans. And this lady was in a difficult place because of her choices and also partly because of her heritage. Look at this. You and I cannot control every aspect of why we're in the situation we're in right this moment. There's some of you are not in a good situation. You can't control every bit of that. But you know something? There's a lot of it you do control. You know, before you go blame anybody else, always investigate and say, okay, how did I get here? You know, what was my part? And that's exactly what he's going to have to do with this lady. A connection with Jesus ends in a conviction. The woman said unto him, sir, give me this water. You know, he's talking about, I can give you some water, and all she can think about is the physical. You know, she's just like Nicodemus. She says, oh, man, I'm tired of coming down in this well. Can you give me something where I don't have to trek down here every day? That's exactly what I want. And she doesn't realize yet the light's about to come on, but this connection that Jesus had with her is going to end in conviction, and when that happens, then she has a chance to really understand who he is and have her life changed. She said, give me this water that I thirst not so I don't have to come down here anymore. Isn't that amazing? That's what we all think sometimes. We just hook up to Jesus, and we don't ever have to do anything else ourselves. That's not the way that works. There's always something that our part in this thing, if it's going to be right. And Jesus said to her, look what he does. He says, go call the husband and come here. Whoa, we just really changed gears, didn't we? She's talking about, give me this water to drink. And he said, here's the deal. You know, before you can have a everlasting water to fulfill you forever, first you got to deal with the sin in your life. And that's exactly what he does. He says, go call the husband and come here. Before any true salvation, there must be a conviction of sin. And you hear me sometime harp on these guys in this day and time who they don't ever talk about sin and they don't ever talk about salvation. And this is a problem. If a person doesn't understand they're a sinner, they'll never be saved. Never. That is the first step always. And that's why they're misleading so many people. Because when they say, oh, I never apologize for not talking about sin or hell or condemnation. So how are they going to know that there's something they need to get out of? They're not. It's going to be a sad day when judgment comes and these guys stand before Jesus and he says, look how many people you misled, and they're guilty. Before any true salvation, there must be a conviction of sin. The woman could not drink of this living water. Jesus is talking about salvation, not just water. He's talking about salvation. She has to admit this sin before, because if she doesn't, it's what we would classify as cheap conversion. You know, when somebody says, oh, yeah, you know, you got to trust Jesus because eternity, he's preparing a place for us, but you never had to deal with any sin in your life. That doesn't work. You can't get over there without dealing with what you got here first. And that's exactly what he taught her. He says, go call your husband. Now, she could have said, you know, my life's in a mess and I've had this happen. That's not what she did. She didn't just do it on her own, so Jesus has to help her. And he does help her. He had to help her get to that point. The conviction is seen in the question, because what did he say to her? I didn't put all those verses in there, but he says, oh, dear. Yeah, I know. I know. You've had how many husbands already? And the one you're living with now is not your husband. That's all he said. And what did she say? She said, I perceive that you're a prophet. Light's coming on. She said, because no one could be able to do this if God wasn't speaking to him. So she's beginning. He had to help her, but now she's saying, wait a minute. Maybe this, she's turning the corner from just physical stuff to a spiritual thing. Because she said, oh, you're a prophet. She's been convicted of her sin, and she senses her need. She said, man, I see this. I've got to make this thing right. In order to make it right, I've got to get together with God. She had that much sense, okay? The Samaritans worshiped. They just worshiped in the wrong way. And if you remember the rest of those verses where she goes and she says, well, you know, the Jews say we're supposed to worship down in Jerusalem, but the Samaritans, they worship on Mount Gerizim. And Jesus confronts her real quick and says, you know, you guys are wrong. You know, the Jews are not doing it right, but they have the right message because God chose them for the message. Even though they've distorted it, they are right, and you guys are wrong because King Omri set up worship of God in Samaria so they wouldn't have to go down to Jerusalem. So it was a false worship, absolutely. So you have to understand that. So and this is the question. She says, so what am I supposed to do? I want to fix this thing. Do I need to go down to Jerusalem? Or can I do it here at Gerizim? What do I need to do? Where should I do it? Should I go up to Gerizim or should I go down to Jerusalem? Much of the time, why is that there? That should have been back up there where I said, when you cause your own problem. Somehow that one got messed up. Am I going the wrong way? Did some of y'all mess up my stuff? Yes, you did. I'm going to have to fix that when we come back, all right? Look what happens. Now, that's the question. The question is, and this is what we're going to see real quick. The woman said, I know that when the Messiah comes, who is called Christ, when he has come, he'll tell us all these things. So that's what I'm going to do. I need to get this thing fixed, and I know he can fix it for me. He can tell me what to do. And Jesus said to her, the one who's speaking to you, I'm him. You're talking about Messiah? You're looking at him. He has not revealed himself in this way to any other religious leader or any other person thus far. And he chooses to do it to a outcast woman. She said, the Messiah, she's going to correct this mess I'm in when he comes. He said, I'm him. She is a regular sinner just like us. And a person has to come to the end of their rope. But this is usually what happens. Oh, my life is crumbling, so I better go to church. You know, I better go and go through this ritual. It doesn't really mean anything. You know, it takes me back to what Martin Luther did whenever he was scaling the stairs of the Holy Sanctus, isn't what it's called? Where, you know, he was trekking these stairs and he was trying to get some relief from his guilt because he just couldn't get away from it. You know, he's a theological professor and he can't get away from it. And finally, you know, he's been studying Romans and he goes back to Habakkuk chapter 2 and he says, where it says, the just shall live by faith. And finally it dawned on him. He says, only God can relieve my guilt. And that's exactly why he broke away. But that's what happens too many times. Isn't it amazing? I mean, it's good that a lot of times people won't seek out really true help till they get to the bottom. And Jesus is there trying to help this lady. She's already on the bottom and doesn't really realize she's on the bottom. But it's like that. She's doing the same thing. Well, I need to fix this thing. Do I need to go to Jerusalem and go through the rituals there? Or do I need to go to Gerizim and go through the rituals there? Do I need to do it the Baptist way or the Presbyterian way or the Methodist way or Catholic way? What do I need to do? You know, that's the question she's asking. I need some religion to fix this. That's what she's saying. When we come to the sense of our sin and we see the mess we're in, we don't need ritual or religion. That's exactly what Martin Luther found out. That doesn't fix it. We need Jesus. So he said, I'm the one. I'm the one that can fix this for you. You know? And what did he say? He says, there's coming a day when they will not worship either in Jerusalem or in Gerizim, but they will worship the Father in what? Spirit and truth. And we know exactly when that happened. Whenever Jesus died and the veil in the temple was torn in two, it was wide open where we don't have to go through anybody else, no ritual, no church stuff. We just go through the blood of Jesus. That's it. So he was talking about, he said, oh, there's coming a day, and it did come shortly after this. It wasn't long whenever that exactly it happened. She believed Christ, and she, you say, well, how do you know? What happens? it says that she goes back to her village, and she says, "Come see a man who told me all things that ever I did. Is this not the Christ?" You said, you think she was converted? I think she was. Because she ran back and she said, I have met the Messiah. And it says what? Many believe as a result of what she did. Every person, the president, the preachers, the Pope, everybody, every person must recognize, first of all, their need of a living water, which is a spiritual resource and a rebirth. That's what he told John. That's what he told Nicodemus in the beginning, right? And at the very same time, every person must see, you see, here's the problem. If all we do is talk about heaven and never talk about what is going on in our life that separates from God, we're going to never see the need for that one. You know, that's exactly what he was telling this lady. You can't give them half-truth. You have to first see that you are a sinner and don't deserve anything that God does. And then when we see that, then we really appreciate what God has done. That's exactly what he's telling her. We must face our sin and our life and face it for what it is. Whether you caused it or whether somebody else in your family, you had a lot of, you know, it always comes down to us. We do make some choices. Even though there might be a lot of circumstances around us that influence that, it always comes down to we have a choice. Isn't that right? That's right. We do have a choice. Every person must behold and trust Christ, the Son of God, the forgiver of sins, the giver of living water. Only then and only there is there a new beginning and a new life. Wow. You say, well, I'm not an outcast. Yes, you are. I am too. Sin caused me to be an outcast. By my natural birth, I'm separated from God the Father. And he comes and whatever he uses, the circumstances in your life, and he tries to bring you to a place where you can see you are a sinner. You are separated. But he's coming to us, and if we will admit that, he will take us to the next step, and he will give us brand new life on the inside. And then we can go to somebody else and say, let me tell you somebody who came to me when I didn't deserve it and gave me a brand new breath of life, and now I'm satisfied. Wow. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for Jesus, for his unbiased toward all of us. While we were sinners, he came and died for us. Lord, this Samaritan lady, an outcast, is a perfect example of us, how we are separated from you by sin. Yet you came for us, offering that we would, if we would trust you, that you would restore us. Lord, help each one of us here today just to sit down sometime today and make sure of where we are with you. First, admitting where we are in our sinful life and how you're the only one who can fix that. And if we will trust you, that you will fix that and restore us and give us peace not only now, but a future with you in heaven. Thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.